So, welcome to Gore's Question Time, and I've got the pleasure today of being with Dan Stewart. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Andrew. How are you doing?
Yeah, very good. Very good. So, I've had some great times with you on some programs and understand how you sort of move through the university sort of spin-out stuff and through stuff through Set Squared and all that. So, I'm really pleased to have you on today because I want to get some background to the story of a university sort of spin out. So if you could give us just a brief introduction to yourself on that first, then we'll get into the organization and all that, Dan. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. So I am the CEO of Viridi CO2. And Viridi CO2 is a new startup from the University of Southampton, built upon the PhD work that I carried out between 2016 and 2020, focusing on transforming carbon dioxide into something valuable, something useful to the world. And that is very much what we are doing with Viridi CO2 now. We've built on that technology to enable chemical manufacturers and founding industries to produce products which can be sold whilst using their waste carbon dioxide.
Great. So take us back to the purpose about why you sort of did this, because, you know, we people have got a view of your PhDs and academics and that in universities doing all this sort of clever stuff. Why did you transform yourself from, I guess, an academic into an entrepreneur? What's the background on that to that start of the journey?
Yeah, it's a really interesting one, really, because when I went into my PhD, I never saw myself doing what I'm doing now. Doing a PhD, your purpose is to do some really cool novel science that gets published in scientific literature. And hopefully, you hope that someone picks it up and runs with it and makes it work. But a lot of science in the labs, that doesn't happen. And really, I was probably 2 years into my PhD when I sort of really got to thinking that we have something really cool here. We discovered it 6 months in, we continue to develop it. And I'm sitting here thinking, there's a lot of issues around CO2 and climate change, and why hasn't it been sorted yet? I watched Al Gore's An Inconvenient Truth when I was 13, in my science lessons, got this problem.
And you know what? Al Gore, I had the pleasure of meeting him when he was speaking at a corporate venturing conference, and my daughter had written a school project on when she was 9, 10, and she had watched Inconvenient Truth, and she'd done a school project in primary school. And do you know what? She came in to the conference, and fair dues, Al Gore spent time with her, looked at the project, and he mentioned her name at the conference. So
amazing.
I had to sort of speak out. He was an amazing guy. It's going back about 9 years ago, and he was so engaging with the people at the conference and with my daughter, and he stayed around for the dinner and all that after. So I've really got to sing praises for Al Gore about all the stuff he does, but how he was so passionate about it and that as well. So a bit of a sideline than that there. But yeah, it's great that you applied in that with him. And it's probably
That's amazing.
Time, actually. Yeah. Yeah.
But I remember watching that video thinking, Cole, we've got a real problem here.
Yeah.
I really hope someone sorts that out. And then 10 years later,
in the middle of
my PhD, sort of, why hasn't anyone sorted it out? So my PhD supervisor at the time, Professor Robert Raja, and who is now my co-founder of Viridi CO2, sort of decided that, well, if no one else is going to really sort of have a go at fixing this, let's have a go. And I'd hate to think that had I not taken it, I'd be sat here 10 years later thinking we had a really cool bit of technology that we didn't try. So that was the turning point, I think.
Okay.
We decided we were going to have a go, and I had to be the one in the driving seat. And that is the point where we started running it as full tilt as we could towards commercialization.
So give us a bit of background, because I've been involved with Set Squared and been sort of a mentor and done some programs and that's why. And you've been so good to share some of your insights and that with some people I've introduced you to. Take us through the university transfer sort of type office and Set Squared. Give us a bit of context about what sort of support you're getting from those organizations.
Yeah, so step one for us was filing for a patent. So I had to sit in front of the university's IP panel and pitch the commercial aspects of our technology and why it was worth putting money in to a patent application. Patent applications are not cheap. And the especially later down the line, when you're looking to go national, into national regions with your patent application, it starts getting very expensive. So I had to get the support of the university, and I did. And they paid for our first patent filing, which was late on in 2019. And from there, the question sort of came up of, well, we've paid for this. How are we going to exploit it? And that's where the cogs sort of start turning as to what are the potential revenue streams that we can generate which exploit this patent. And we sort of went down the ideas of licensing. We went down spin out. Was it going to be just a tech transfer? And we decided that we didn't want to lose control of the technology. We didn't want to see it sold to somebody and it not get used. This is such a powerful technology. We wanted to be in the driving seat. And that's where we moved towards a spin out company, where we could continue to develop the technology to make it even better and more commercially viable, and really do what we want in terms of bringing benefit to the world. So after that, it was a case of I had to finish my PhD, and that kind of had to come first. But with the commercial aspects in mind, we started tuning the aspects of the research. And that ended up in my PhD thesis, which continues to be embargoed for obvious reasons. And once we finished that, we were pointed towards the iCure program, which is the innovation to commercialization of university research program run by, funded by Innovate UK, but it was delivered in our case by Set Squared. That was brought to us by the university's research and innovation service, but also through Future Worlds, who are the on-campus startup accelerator who I work very closely with, who've essentially been responsible for getting us to where we are now. And that was a three-month program of calling up anybody and everybody who would talk to me within the chemical industry, and some of the other areas outside of that as well, to validate our technology. It's about finding out more why they didn't want our technology than those who wanted it, because we could learn from it, how we would deliver it to them. What are the aspects we haven't considered? And at the end of that process.
Just onto that, you know, I was involved in that IQ program, and, you know, Don Spallinger and the team and that there. And I think that it's quite simple, but it's so powerful getting you out and talking to organizations, because I find it, whether it's in research, but also in the corporates I work with, they seem so much in their own heads or such a great idea themselves without actually going out and talking to people and getting ideas and all that. And I think that's been so powerful with the programs, the IQ program, and that, and what Set Squared does is getting people out. And we can learn a lot from that. If you're an entrepreneur, if you're an academic, or, you know, if you're within a corporate, I think it's such an important thing to get over. So I want to re-emphasize that in that program.
Absolutely. I think as scientists, we are quite guilty of being able to sing the praises of our own technologies and our own research. That partly comes from, I think, academia is very cutthroat. And a lot of the funding that comes to academic institutions has to be on the basis of blowing your own trumpet. And there was a distinct transition for me going into iCure of having a really cool technology and not knowing how to apply it, to then going through iCure, I spoke to 97 people, different organizations of different levels, from CEOs all the way down to sort of scientists lower down the food chain, to really understand whether they wanted our technology and how we would deliver the technology, and really finding out what was bad about it, why it wouldn't work in certain systems. And that wasn't a bad thing for us. And at the end of it, we suddenly knew how we were going to deliver it, what our business model was, what the real USPs of this technology were for the big corporates. And I talked to a lot of some of the biggest chemical manufacturers in the world. And that was so important for us, because we came out of that knowing what we were doing at that point, because I came in very naive. We're going to save the world with our CO2 tech, but we have no idea how we're going to do it. And that's one of the greatest things I took from IQ.
I've seen that as well, because I've been in similar circumstances helping, you know, startups like yourself, but with the contacts that I've got through the corporates that I work with. And when I've had the opportunity to speak to the corporates or taking people like yourself and that along, you know, very quickly they say, right, yeah, it's great in the lab, but can you scale it up? And can you do this? And yes, it's fine that, yeah, you think you can save the planet, but who's the customer who's actually going to pay for it?
Exactly.
And I see that so often in that as well, that you've got, you know, and I've seen it through sustainable energy things, through carbon things, through health solutions. There are some fantastic ideas, but unfortunately, we've got to find out who's going to pay for it or what's the business model. So I agree, you getting out there and having that discussion before you get it even into a test tube, never mind in scale up and all the rest of it, I think is so powerful for people like yourself to learn from.
Exactly. And I think it is a real shame in a way, because there are some amazing technologies out there. I've been a part of some of them in our own labs. I've read about them elsewhere, but they will just never get out the lab because no one will pay for it, or there just isn't, it doesn't scale properly. And having to realize that and come to terms with it as being, this has to be more cost effective than, say, technologically efficient, or from a perfectly scientifically sound, in a way, there's a trade-off there. And that's really difficult for someone who has been trained in science, who has to be very detail oriented and meticulous in order to get into peer-reviewed journals. A really steep learning curve. But from that, we got all the answers I felt we needed to push forward with the spin out. And then, of course, that opened the door to the Innovate funding as well, which we were able to apply for, and we won. So we actually, as of the beginning of October, we started our Innovate UK follow-on funding, worth £300,000. And that's also enabled us to secure equity investment as well.
So yeah, to tell us about the equity investment sort of side of it now, because that, you know, that again is a different skill and a different sort of switch into pitching your business and giving away a share of the business, and then getting into EIS and SEIS and tax and all the rest of it. So give us a bit of the insight into that fundraising part as an entrepreneur now.
I mean, the only way to describe it is exhausting. You are trying to bring along people onto your journey who don't understand the technology, who don't really know you as a person, and you have in some cases 5 minutes to prove to them that you are going to be the person to deliver it. And I was very fortunate that with Future Worlds, we had a lot of pitch training, and I mean a lot. And we got access to networking events, and we were actually able to bring in a group of Southampton alumni, largely investors, who are sort of high net worth individuals, alumni who just love the technology. And we have a group of angel investors now who have put in just short of £600,000 of equity investment into the company.
And I know it from the other side. I've been a founding member of Henley Business Angels. And I think we got introduced actually through one of the ventures that I'd invested in, Chimera, was our
original. Indeed.
That, wasn't it? So I've invested in that. And been through that investment sort of journey. And we've, in fact, one of the ventures I'm doing now is in the circular economy sort of side. Mm-hmm. And brought in 4 investors. And the team that I've been doing it with, they've come out of a corporate. So very similar culture and issues that you're coming from, that are, yours was academic papers. The corporate was large budgets from a corporate. And my turnaround was like, guys, we've now got to get somebody's inheritance from their kids. They're going to put it into yours, a venture, and doing that first round at SEIS sort of level, and not, for seed equity sort of investment. But you're right, you've got to get that team together. You've got to get your passion. You've got to show the business sort of type model. I think there's a slightly different aspect, though, that I'd like to bring out here, is that in this early part of the journey, it's about asking for advice as much as asking for money. And you talked about that when you talked about, talking to lots of other individuals. And I think that those things, I think, are useful to think about in both sort of aspects. And that, isn't it? Because when we're going through investment raising now, we're speaking to funds who are saying, oh, well, you're too early for us. Come back later. But I like what you're doing. So I'll introduce you to the people who feed us deals and do the earlier stage. So were you getting that as well? Taking the advice and getting new introductions and stuff?
Very much so. The one thing I found on this journey is someone who is prepared to give you a little bit of advice from experience is gold.
Yeah.
And willing to give it to you for free.
Yeah.
So talking to people who've been through the process, people who are experienced in entrepreneurship, investors, getting warm intros to people is so valuable. And this is why I think one of the greatest skills anyone can have in this space is communication. And able just to talk to people and win their trust, get an intro to somebody else, and it just grows exponentially that way.
Yeah.
And I was very lucky to have a group of people who helped me, including myself, to make the links and get us to where we are now.
Yeah. And so where you are now then, from what my understanding, you've got Innovate UK money, you've got a pot of money in that from your angel investors. So how much runway does that give, and what's the sort of next inflection point in terms of what are you going to achieve now with that investment and support?
Yeah, so we've raised just under £1 million, which is going to see us through the 12 months of the Innovate project plus another 6 months on top of that.
Yeah.
And the chief goals that we have over the next 12 months is scaling the technology, as every startup in this space seems to have to do, and bringing in early adopter clients who want to work with us at the early stage to give them unfair market access, almost, to develop our technology and tune it to their systems in order to make CO2-based products that they are able to sell to their current customers. And that is going to be our aim over the next 12 months. It's very ambitious. And from there, we'll then look to do probably the next funding round and look to grow and scale the Viridi CO2 beyond the UK.
Right. And, you know, my background is working with large corporates around their corporate venturing sort of side of things. And I'm really passionate about startups like yourselves that are going to help in that ecosystem, bring new solutions that then corporates can scale up. So, you know, who's the ideal corporate? What's the sort of corporate that you want to partner with, get investment from, or you want to disrupt and just spoil their party? What's that corporate interaction that you're sort of seeing now with your business?
Yeah, so I thought long and hard about this. This is the trickiest question that you sort of sent me over in the pre-interview ahead of this podcast. And I don't think there's a single company that I want to pigeonhole myself to. But what I definitely do want is I want to work with a CVC who has a proven track record in investing and supporting sustainable technologies. Unfortunately, we live in a world where there is greenwashing from big corporates. And I don't want to get into bed with a company who is just investing in us, throwing money at us because it looks good for them. This is a long-term relationship that we're getting involved with a CVC. So I want someone with a credible history in developing strategies to increase their own sustainability, to engage with new technologies, and to reduce their environmental impact. And someone who's had that, who's done that in the past and demonstrated that. Because that, for me, is the best kind of partnership. Someone who I know is promoting the things that we are trying to promote in terms of sustainability and being planet-driven. And it's not just a cash transaction for Viridi CO2. We're not just looking to take money and that's it. It is working with these big companies, these big corporates, to improve their practices and to see us grow as a company as well.
Right. Okay. So just remind us again now, you've got to this sort of point. What's the product? You know, is it a chemical? Is it a process? What is the outcome that you're going to do to capture the carbon or just remind us again, because from your first introduction, let's recap it for folks.
So Viridi CO2 has a catalytic platform that is a solid catalyst that is able to transform carbon dioxide better than anyone else in the market that I'm aware of under lower temperatures and pressures and much faster than anyone else. So what we are offering is an opportunity for chemical manufacturers, foundation industries to redirect their waste CO2, CO2 that would end up in the atmosphere, and pump it into a process that has our technology into it in order to produce tailored high-value chemicals that they can sell. So valorizing their CO2, doing it under reduced energy requirements, and being able to have a product that they can sell at the end of that.
And what's that product? Is it a plastic? Is it a liquid? Is it a fuel? Or is it all of those things?
So the products that they can make can be polymers. It can be monomeric small chemical molecules. The actual scope that we can of products that we can produce is actually quite wide. We're not a one-trick pony sort of catalyst, which is really exciting. But we're talking about polymers that go into polyurethanes that are found in everything, mattresses, car seats, your phone. We're talking about polymers that go into surfactants. So we're actually trying to develop CO2 shampoo and CO2 detergents, which is really, really exciting, all the way down to things like battery electrolytes. So the battery industry is booming. All of them need an electrolyte. So we are able to produce that from CO2 as well.
Okay, no, fantastic. So just one last question, just reflect back. What, you know, there's been a fantastic journey you've been on through that research and into spin out and sort of stuff. What is it you wished you knew sort of at the beginning? What's been the thing that you've learnt so far? Because you've still got a lot more of the journey to go.
Yeah.
So what so far have you got reflection then?
I think the one thing that I tell myself is to be patient. One thing that has given me the most frustration is almost how slow some processes happen.
Yeah.
And I've had my foot on the gas since day one, trying to push processes as quickly as possible. Well, when you start bringing in legal and IP, all of these processes, they have to be right.
Yeah.
First time round. You don't want to find in a couple of years' time that things fall apart because you've there was an oversight in a legal document, and that takes time.
Yeah,
and I don't think I appreciated that so much on day one. And I go back and tell myself, it's okay, we're going to get there. But just, it takes a bit more time.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's great. Look, Dan, really appreciate the insights and you sharing to our podcast community. And I look forward to helping and supporting you more. And I know you've been a great support to the community as well, so I'm sure people might want to reach out to you and give you ideas of corporates you could work with, look to invest in you in the next round, but you're not looking for money at the moment, etc. So look forward to helping and supporting you further.
Thank you, and I welcome people to reach out. As I said earlier, it's really important to get those little golden nuggets from those who've gone through it, and I'm happy to help where I can give back to the community.
Excellent. Thank you, Dan. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much, Andrew.